Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broder. We're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, are you ready? Here I come to the UK. It's about bloody time.
Oh,
let's do it.
No. Chris, are you going to be staying in London, or are you going to be out at your family pile? Are you going to be like around and about, or am I going to have to hunt you out in some like parkland monstrosity?
I'll be on my private yacht, moored out at Canary Wharf in central London. No, I don't know yet. I'll probably be staying with family, probably renting an Airbnb for a bit, and maybe in London. I'll basically just be living out of a rucksack and running around.
Filled with lacy drives and cameras and lenses and stuff.
Yeah, I did. I have done one thing. You know, there's one luxury I have when I come to the UK.
Yeah.
And that is, I rent a good car because my car is like practical, nice.
So what's your good car? Because I mean, most modern cars are quite boring unless you've got a Fiat 500 like me and look like a cool dude, real cool
boy
dude.
Racer Donaldson in the house. what have I got? I've got a BMW 3 Series, which it's nothing too glamorous.
No,
standard
these days,
car.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to hate BMW drivers because in the UK they are just reckless bastards. They're the ones that always try to knock you off the road. Mm. And then I got in a BMW and I was like, yes, power, I understand now. I mean, that's my guilty pleasure.
I never understand because I'm a driver of a small car and I have no interest in cars at all. But when you get behind
your Fiat in my BMW,
when you get behind the wheel of a large automobile, do you feel like a difference in power acceleration? Presumably, because you can only ever go as far as the speed limit will allow. So like, why would I be that bothered having like a more powerful car? Because presumably you can only go as fast as the speed limit dictates. Anywhere, and in London, 20.
It's not just that; it's the acceleration. You tap the accelerator, and you just shoot off really fast.
Okay.
Sometimes too fast. I remember, basically, there's a car company I use when I come back. I'm not going to say who it is. I'm not going to give them free publicity, like we do to every other brand, every episode, every week. But anyway, you basically choose the tier of car. So I choose the mid-class tier, right?
Right.
And they give you either a BMW, an Audi, or a Mercedes. I think it's an S-Class,
right?
A 3 Series, or a Audi, like A4 or 5 or 6. Audi A6, sorry. So you get one of the good cars. And I got one time I just... You don't get to choose which one it is normally.
Yeah.
And I got the Mercedes. And, you know, I'm not really a car person. I've never really been that big into cars. Cars that I've owned historically are very cheap, very crap, and very decrepit. And this was like the first time I rented a car that was good. And I got in, it was like a brand new Mercedes. And, like, no sooner than had I driven out the rental place, 10 minutes later, I was on like a road going onto the highway, And I hit the accelerator and the car shot off far quicker than I had anticipated. And I started driving down the road, and then I saw a police car. It was one of those guys with the like laser gun, and he like shot the car. And he looked at his colleague in the car, like waved to him, and he like hopped in, and then they chased me down the road. It was like, I was like, for fuck's sake, of course. Now I'm the dickhead Mercedes driver. And like they pulled me over, and I was like, this is really funny. I've only been driving this car 10 minutes. And they were like, shut up and give us your driver's license. There's nothing funny about crime.
No. I was like, right.
The only upside is they pulled me over in a McDonald's car park. So after I got fined, I had a Big Mac. It was great. Swings and roundabouts. Turn every obstacle into a success. But it was a bit annoying. But anyway, that's what I'm looking forward to. More than seeing Pete Donaldson. More than seeing my family and friends.
Yeah.
Anything like that. It's driving
a BMW.
And listening, and listening to loud 80s music as I roar through the countryside with the windows down, laughing like a madman. And that's basically why I go back to the UK.
Okay.
That's pretty much it, really. That's right. It.
Down I to understand. That. I understand.
Trust me, when you get in a good car, you will see why people like good cars so much.
Okay. You're like, well, look, I'll have a go in it. I'll do some donuts. Beautiful.
We should. We're still taking ideas for what Pete and I should do in the UK.
A race.
I think we should go to the old Top Gear racetrack and rent out like Aston Martins or something. And just speed
as
around.
As long as it's an automatic, I can do it.
I think it'd be quite fun. I think it'd be good. I'm trying to plan a wacky weekend with Connor at the moment as well, because by sheer good luck or bad luck, he's over there as well with Joey and Gant for Gant's wedding. But we're trying to do a wacky weekend, but the time we're doing it, we're planning, is the same time it's the Queen's Jubilee, which means there's lots of days off around then,
and
everything's fully booked and you can't do anything. So
we're having a Jubilee party.
It's kind of a shame.
Come and enjoy our silly Jubilee street party that the neighbours are very into doing. We've got to beat the Queen penalty competition. We'll have food. We'll have drinks. We'll have a little bake off, probably.
I'll bring Connor. We'll just film that.
Yeah, exactly.
What would the video be called, though? You've always got to start with the title. What would the title be?
God, I don't know. Two silly idiots.
I celebrated
come
the Queen.
Another silly. I celebrated the Queen. They love the Queen out in Japan. It'd be perfect.
It's true.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I've just put out a video today. It's another one of these I went in a very expensive room videos. I kind of like mixed feelings on it.
Right.
I don't necessarily like making the videos where I go in somewhere expensive and glamorous.
Right.
Especially during a cost of living crisis. But then I guess that's what people want to see. And as a content creator, right? I've got to give the people what they want. What I think they'll want.
Well, I mean, who's the most popular at YouTube? Who's that fellow who's always giving stuff away or eating a big pizza or doing Squid Games and all that bollocks? Like Mr. Beast.
Mr. Beast,
yeah. Just give away a load of stuff. Just get hundreds. Just be really cynical. Just get 10 quid out of a cash machine and just go, I'm going to give this guy $10 and I'm going to take 30 fucking minutes to do it. Boom!
That's the idea.
My takedown of Mr. Beast. Boom! I'm going to rip off Squid Games and then say thanks very much to the creator for their inspiration. Boom! Mr. Beast, you just got served, sunshine!
The problem I have with Mr. Beast is, like, he does these incredible things, right? And then it's just like, he just glazes over it very quickly. Like, I built Squid Game, I spent $5 million in real life, and there's, like, a few shots of some idiots, like, falling over, and that's it.
Yeah.
And there was a... When he did build that Squid Game set and do it, the video itself was pretty boring. It was more like a wow, he's done it.
Yes.
But the really interesting video was the team that had done it for him and had built it and did all the special effects. They sort of did a behind the scenes look at it, and that was far more fascinating and far more interesting than watching these people. I mean, but like, I don't know, I didn't come here to criticize Mr. Beast today.
I did,
but all right. Oh, I don't know. But I feel like he does these great things and sometimes glazes over them too fast. But then at the end of the day, younger generations don't stick around to watch things very long these days. You've got to make things quicker and snappier. Watch time. Got to keep it down. I do worry that by the year 2030, all videos will just be 10 seconds long. And it'll be me just going and like condensing a 20-minute video into like one very quick sentence about Japan. Like, yeah, it's pretty bleak. I'm not optimistic. When are you going to start doing TikTok, Pete? Where's the peak TikTok channel?
Yeah, where is the TikTok channel? The only person I know who seriously does TikTok is my neighbour, who's a 45-year-old man who does, maybe cracking on for 50, who, he just puts a lot of stuff on TikTok. He moves cars professionally, really nice cars. Now, better than a BMW that you'd be renting, like proper, like top of the line McLarens and stuff, crazy stuff. But so he's got a TikTok worth the name. He could be an influencer, I think. Hey, look at this car. It's not mine. I'm just moving for some dude.
That's kind of shocking. My image of TikTok, right, is 14-year-old person doing a silly dance.
Yes.
And to be honest, that's not a stereotype. That's just generally, I think, what the vast majority of. But that's pretty cool, though, if it's managed to appeal to him and what he's doing. But
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a bit too old and like narrow-minded. Whenever some new technology or new social media comes out, I'm like, rubbish, codswallop. It took me ages for people to convince me to go on Instagram.
Yes.
And Instagram was good for a while, but now it's just TikTok, but not as good.
Are you on TikTok then? Do I need to follow you on TikTok?
No. Somebody's on TikTok in my stead. Someone just steals my videos and uploads them.
Well, there you go.
But I don't mind. You know, good publicity, you know.
All good.
As long as they don't make money from it, that's when I crack down, when they take the money. We got a story this week from Holly from the Gold Coast, Australia. It says, hello, Pachinko Pete and charismatic Chris. A few podcast episodes ago, you talked about how safe Japan is for solo female travellers. So I wanted to tell you this story of a fateful night out in Fukuoka in March 2020. I was in Japan on holiday as COVID was taking hold, and I thought I would enjoy probably the last Sunday night out. So I ventured out into downtown Fukuoka on my own. A couple of strong zeros already behind me, I enter a small bar on the second floor of a building where I had a further two Moscow Mules. Good choice. My drink of choice. Good one. Well done. Well done, Holly. Out in the elevator, a group of Japanese people who saw me and excitedly asked, are you coming to Happy Cock? God, that's not a question you want to hear on a night out. After realising there was a nightclub called Yes, Happy Cock on the upper floors of the building, I said sure and joined the group. My first mistake came at the entrance, where entry to the club required you to purchase a Nomi Hordai package, or you can drink package. Always dangerous. I proceeded to the bar and ordered my first of many Long Island iced teas.
Oof,
very dangerous drink indeed. Mistake number two. Speaking in my broken Japanese to the girls and the bartenders around me, one bartender was particularly impressed and gave me three rounds of free fireball shots. How are you not dead at this point in the story? This is insane. Next thing I know, I'm being woken up by a very lovely Japanese woman with my face hung over a toilet bowl. She then ushers me downstairs and hails me a taxi to get home. The taxi, however, can't take me all the way home as my hostel was on a one-way street. So I got out 100 metres from my hostel and pay him, feeling suddenly very sick again. I sat down next to a bit of garden, close to vomiting. I'll be okay. I just need to sit here for a moment and collect myself. That moment would turn out to be 4.5 hours asleep on the sidewalk in the rain. I had my passport, phone, credit card, everything, and not a thing went missing. I had the worst hangover of my life, but it just reconfirmed to me how safe Japan really is when you can fall asleep in the rain with your worldly possessions upon you and not so much as be touched. I hope to return for another solo trip, in August to Hokkaido, but no more Nomi Hordai, all you can drink for me. All the best, guys. Holly from Gold Coast, Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite common, isn't it? The whole laying down the street, just being catastrophically drunk. We talk about this on like the Shibuya Meltdown Twitch, which is really amazing. Check it out. Pretty funny. People just do it all the time. And yeah, Japan is safe in that regard. And yes, this was a happy, nice story, albeit a drunken story. But like, you know, the bars still are a bit dodgy at times. Be very careful if you're going to Kabukicho and Roppongi. I've just made a video on this talking about it. Had a horrific story on this podcast, I think about a year or two ago. And I basically built the video around that. A girl called Lucy who came here with her husband on a honeymoon. And they were lured into a bar in Kabukicho, nightlife district, and drugged. And all their money was like taken. They took $6,000 off their credit cards. I don't know what the hell they must have had at this bar. Like, clearly they were robbed blind. But the worst bit of the story is they were drugged, and Lucy like vividly recalls like looking over at her husband, who's just have the like kissing this hostess girl, or the hostess girl is kissing him, and it's all not how you want to spend your honeymoon. So,
no, probably not. Yeah.
A bleak story, but obviously, you know, it's rare.
I think, yeah, and I think Americans will certainly be astonished at how overserved you can be in bars pretty much elsewhere around the world. In America, they really don't allow you to become that pissed in most places. They have rules where
really?
They don't. Well, they you know, most restaurants, most bars won't serve an openly drunken person. But obviously, that's not the case everywhere. But certainly in Britain, in Japan, they'll happily just get you absolutely fucking tacked up like you wouldn't believe, and then you're just on the floor outside. Absolutely done in.
Yeah, certainly not a factor in the UK. And nomi hodai is a dangerous thing, or you can drink. I think the reason it works so well in Japan is people don't need a lot of drinks to sort of become inebriated.
Yeah.
They you know, two beers and already people are on their way here. So nomi hodai works for that. It'd be very dangerous to implement an all you can drink system in the UK.
Yeah.
Like, that would be the end of the UK economy. But remember to be safe, though. But that's a nice story. And, you know, Japan is very safe to travel around as a solo traveller in general, I think. It's one of the best countries to travel. So, yeah, well done, Holly. And please be careful on your trip to Hokkaido. Don't do that again.
No.
What we got, though, in the news this week, Pete? What's going on? What's going down in Japan?
Well, we've been talking about this for a very, 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 very long time. Japan potentially, possibly, hopefully opening up for tourists. And yeah, so at the beginning of March, Japan had been capping overseas entries into the country at 5,000 people per day. Now, we're talking like people with visas, students, people who have jobs out there, people who have a business interest and they've got all of their papers in place. So this doesn't actually technically mean that it's going to change for the better for your general off-the-peg tourist. But according to national broadcaster NHK, the Japanese government is considering raising the entry limit per day to 20,000 people, all kicking off in June. It will vary from country to country depending on what everyone's infection rate is, etc. And also favourable analysis of the new cases of coronavirus infection that happened during Golden Week that took place last month. They've not had time to look at the data yet, but Fumio Kishida, the Prime Minister, made comments, hopefully, that Japan will open up in June. Obviously, it's going to put a massive strain on everything. You're not going to need a PCR test on arrival either, which is obviously something that slows up your entry into the country and stuff. But no statement is made as to whether this 10,000 people coming into the country is going to include tourists or just academic travellers or business travellers. Either way, an increase would be a step in the right direction, but it sounds very much like it's not going to be as open as the noises that Fumio Kishida made last month. I think it might be a little bit later than that.
It all hangs basically on an election. I think in July, the ruling party's got an election. It's funny, like, you hear these entry limits, 20,000 people. But, like, it used to be 2 million people a month, not 20,000.
Yeah.
Got a long way to go, but I don't know. I've been saying summer. I'm keeping it. I'm just saying
nice
summertime.
And vague.
I think Japan's going to reopen. I bloody hope so, because I feel like I've had, like, one arm tied behind my back the last sort of 2 years. On abroad in Japan, one of the biggest things I talk about is travel Japan, right? And tourism. And I can't do that because no one can come in. And I'm at breaking point. I've run out of ideas now. I have to do the same videos all over again. I have to go through my portfolio and just be like, right, I'm doing it all over again from scratch in 4K. But, like, I honestly, it's good. Things are changing. Things are looking good. I did see when the Prime Minister was in the UK, he sort of said he wants to make Japan's entry regulations close to that of the G7 nations. And so far as I know, all G7 nations are fine. You can wander in, right? You can go in.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Without worrying. As far as I know, there's no tests I've got to do when I turn up to the UK in a few days' time. I just rock up, get in the BMW and drive off into the sunset listening to Duran Duran. It's going to be magical. But, of course, as always, guys, we'll keep you posted. The moment, the minute, the second that they say Japan is opening on this day, on this week, you will be the first to know, and I'll make a big song and dance about it. But it looks like things are finally happening. And quite a lot of people have already started booking flights that I know. So have you booked your flight, Pete? Have you booked all your flights? You ready to go?
Don't trust them. Don't trust them. Going to be rubbish. Don't trust them. They're going to let us down.
They might be, but it's free to change it, isn't it? And also, when they do open, the flight prices might rock it up. Why not take advantage of the cheap prices now?
I'll see what I can do.
I don't even know if you can fly to Japan direct anymore. So that kind of sucks. No. Well, certainly not from Europe. So that takes some of the magic out of proceedings.
Well, you can obviously fly from Frankfurt. You can fly from Finland, can't you? But you've got to get there first from England. Europe, you can definitely fly there, can't you?
Yeah, and I think I'm transiting through Germany, as I said. Lucky Germans getting a fly direct.
Lucky
I hate
Germans.
Changing flights. I hate flights.
It's nice. Go and
to the doctor.
Go and have a sausage.
Go and have a sausage.
Go and have a sausage.
All right, I'll do that. Jet lag sitting
have
in
a curry verse.
In a lounge. I'll do it. I went to the doctor, the ear doctor today, though, and fortunately my ear has healed.
Yay!
I can hear again. Hey, so
well done.
It shouldn't explode halfway through the plane. But imagine taking off your eardrum bursts, and then for 15 hours as you fly over Mongolia, China, Kazakhstan, whatever, you're just sitting there in pain. But yeah, I think it'll be good. I think there's also Wi-Fi on the plane, so there's no escape anymore.
No excuse not to create. While you're out there.
Exactly. Going to do some work, except I definitely won't. We'll be back in a moment, guys, with the fax machine and your comments, stories, and questions.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Dawson?
We got a message for, oh, where's me bloody sheet gone? Me sheet's gone, Chris.
Oh, it down.
What a silly little goose. I've got it. Yes. If you would like to get in touch with the show, I'm filling what as it loads up the document, the iCloud system. If you'd like to get an email in, abrongeman@gmail.com. And these pit. abrongemanpodcast@gmail.com. Here's the message.
You're
hello,
fired.
Stone Cold Chris Broad and Pete the Rock Johnson. My name is Adam from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I had a question about tabletop RPGs. You know us, we're real tabletop RPG monsters, aren't we? Here in the West, we've seen an explosion in popularity of Dungeons and Dragons, but I was wondering if you'd seen a rise in popularity in Japan of Dungeons and Dragons. Japan and Dungeons and Dragons. Have a wonderful day, Adam. Have you seen many kind of like board games and RPG kind of improvements? There surely is not enough room for figurines and little desktop, you know, RPGs.
I love the way you said drunkards and dragons there.
Drunkards and dragons.
I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah.
It's the Pete Donaldson version of Dungeons and Dragons.
Drunkards and dragons. Yeah.
It's the Holly from Australia. It's a night out in Fukuoka turned into a tabletop RPG. I haven't seen a rise in popularity, no. And I don't really know that many people play it. It's certainly not as big a thing here as it is back home. Like, I remember, you know, going around the UK down the streets, there used to be like folks playing Dungeons and Dragons and stuff.
Yes.
In those shops, right?
Yes. Games Workshop.
I don't know if they still exist, but
they do.
Yeah, no, it's not really a thing here. It's not really a thing. Maybe we should bring, we got the arcades that kind of make up for it, right? People
yeah.
playing pachinko, people playing in arcade games and different machines and things there. That's kind of what they do here instead of Dungeons yeah. and Dragons.
But you'd think that you think that it would be quite popular, but then I don't know, like, games seem to be such a solitary sort of undertaking in Japan. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
Life is a game. I want to play Drunkards and Dragons now. What would that entail? Can we copyright
Drunkards
that? We take it. Would we get done by
waving
Dungeons
around
and Dragons?
A sword pissed out of his mind? Yeah, I don't know, really.
Oh, riding a dragon. We got one from Ubaid. Hi Chris Pete, my name's Ubaid and I'm reaching out from London. I've got my first GCSE tomorrow and all these exams got me curious about how students are examined in Japan. As you were an English teacher, Chris, I expect you would have encountered exams at some point while teaching. How do they compare to exams in the UK? Keep up the good work, all the best, Ubaid. How do they compare? I don't know, really. I was rubbish when the students had to do exams and anything relating to an exam, I just sort of ran off to the staff room and did nothing. It was great. I loved it when the students did exams because it made me redundant. And the whole, like, all six classes of every year would do exams at any given time. And it'd be like a 2-week holiday for me. I could just sit in the staff room. That's my knowledge of Japan's exams. I know that. I don't really know what the difference is. They are pretty much the same. There's a lot more rote learning in Japan. I feel like creativity and, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? I feel like there's a lot more rote learning. It's more like just learning things over and over repetitively rather
right.
than sort of being creative or, I don't know, original. Maybe I'm making up, I don't know, but I don't think that's an exam, that's a learning method, teaching method. No, honestly, unfortunately, I'm not the guy there. All I know is do your best on those GCSE exams, get all A's, and you get into Oxford Brookes, the as discussed last week. I don't know, do you remember your GCSE exams, Pete?
I kind of remembered, would that have been 1997? Yeah, I think it probably was 1997. I think I did mine, which is the same, which I remember I did my IT exam very poorly because I'd went out and bought the Radiohead album OK Computer on that day. So I spent all my time listening to that when I should have really been doing final preparations for it. Yeah, I think I did all right. I didn't find them. They are needlessly stressful. They're spread over, like, is it a month? Where you've just got a lot of fucking bloody admin to do. And you've got, like, you're just constantly. It's such a. I don't think teachers are that into it, but I don't know why we sort of put so much onus on these bloody GCSEs, because you're fucking 16.
I agree,
Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. But yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy them. Didn't particularly take to them. But I did get an A star in religious studies. So you know me, you know me, Chris. I'm super religious.
How did you get an A star in religious studies?
I don't bloody know.
Did you bribe the teacher?
It's all bloody stories, isn't it? It's all especially when you go to Catholic school. They don't tell you about the Muslims or the Hindus or anything or the Sikhs. They just tell you about, you know, transubstantiation and Caesarea Philippi and all that shit.
I don't remember. I know what you mean, though. I mean, I still have nightmares, right? I think I had a nightmare just a couple of days ago that I was preparing for my exams. I can't remember if they were GCSE exams or A-levels, but it was something important. And, yeah, I used to hate exams. Very stressful. Very, not fun. I did okay, generally. I think I got, like, an A-star in history.
Yeah.
And it was because I had a really great teacher. And all the subjects I did poorly in, often the teacher was rubbish.
Oh,
and
blame the teacher.
It really does hinge.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'm blaming the teacher. Although maybe I've got to be careful there, depending on how my Japanese students performed, but given on my teaching. But, like, you know, I think it really does hinge on the teacher, doesn't it? And I still feel like the way education systems work are very outdated and rubbish.
Yeah.
When I was learning Japanese, I was able to do in 1 year what would have taken me like 5 years in a classroom, just because I used like the iPad. I used lots of like new technology, an iPad I'd won in a competition to basically learn Japanese. And I looked into what were the most effective ways to study Japanese. And it turns out they were all completely different from how they teach Japanese in the classroom and whatnot. So, yeah, I really don't like the education system. I think it's very outdated. I think every student should be given an iPad or a tablet that's cheaper than that. And all the classes should be delivered via a tablet, like a video you watch or something. And then you get to play like an interactive game. And then the teacher's still there in the room. And they're there to facilitate debate and conversation and sort of have like a, you know, an interesting debate and sort of show that you've learned what you've just been studying. But like, I think that's the future. Get an iPad for everyone.
Get an iPad to show you have an analytical
iPads,
mind.
Isn't it?
I have an analytical mind and I've got a tablet with 16 gigabytes of memory. I'm done. I'm sorted. I'm complete.
Make it happen. Future of teaching.
Exactly.
All right, we got one here from the Netherlands. Over to you, Pete.
My name is Julike, I think. Julike. Or Julie's fine, says Julike. And I'm a long-time fan of the podcast. Like many others, my question concerns food, specifically Japanese food outside of Japan. As a recent graduate with some student debt, it's not the cards for me to visit Japan anytime soon. However, I really want to try some proper Japanese food after hearing you guys praise it over and over. I'm not going to show whether you've talked about this before, but I was wondering what your experiences are with Japanese food served in restaurants outside of Japan. Is there a large difference in quality, or does it depend on the place? Also, could you recommend any Japanese restaurants in London? That'd be great. Julik, it might be Julik actually. Julik from the Netherlands. Thank you very much for your message, Julie.
Half the question was just Pete debating the pronunciation.
It's got to be Julik, hasn't it? Julik. Unless there'd be a Q there. I don't know. I don't bloody know. Sorry, Julie.
Learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know, I mean, you're the guy who lives near London and lived in London for a long time. Do you know any good Japanese restaurants? The only one I know is Engawa, which is the Wagyu restaurant where every like course that they have had some sort of Wagyu in it, which was just perfect. You had like rice with Wagyu mixed in. You had like Wagyu steak. You had Wagyu. You know, I'm running out of ways.
Hard to get Wagyu,
to eat
wrong.
Wagyu.
But they sort of give you like those bento boxes with like a load of different sort of flavours in. I mean, that is the gold standard, I think, for London's Japanese food. There's a little, you can have like a little lunch on the corner of Chinatown. I forget the name. It's a big green wooden building.
And
you
Tokyo
know,
Diner.
You know what it might be, Tokyo Diner. Is it Tokyo Diner, the one on this corner? But it's like got
possibly
one of those proper like press the button slidey door sort of things that you don't necessarily see in the West all that often.
Slidey door.
And I was like, oh, this is authentic, isn't it? But you recommended Sakana Te. I thought that was a really nice sushi restaurant, but sushi only. And they're quite surly in there, let's say. But if you're willing to sort of go through it and not have amazing service, it's a hell of a meal.
Sakana Te.
Sakana,
not Sakana. Don't,
all right, Sakana.
Don't
I'm westernising it, mate.
Sakana.
Sakana.
I remember when I lived in Sakata for all those years.
Sakata.
My family were like, are you going off to Sakata? And I'd be like, Sakata, goddammit.
Neil Sakata.
And Sakata, isn't it? Well, I can hardly talk. I still screw up all the Japanese places, like, you know, Osaka. I'm like, Osaka.
Yeah.
Osaka, isn't it? And Kobe. I'm like, Kobe. Kobe, let's go to Kobe. And like, yeah. You know, I'm as guilty as anyone. But it's Sakana. Sakana, I tell you, not Sakana. What was the question, though? Is there a large difference in quality, or does it depend on the place? What were your experience with Japanese food served in restaurants outside Japan?
Hmm.
You know, it's a mixed bag, isn't it? Like the general Japanese cheap diners. I do find that the problem is with Japanese food, for whatever reason, is to get good Japanese food, you've got to pay a hefty price for it. All the restaurants Pete and I just reeled off, whether it's Sakanate or Engawa, you know, these are places that are kind of pricey, and they're good. It's like an authentic experience. Places like Wagamama's, Yo Sushi, pricey. Actually, the most reasonably priced good Japanese food restaurant chain that I know outside Japan is Shoryu Ramen.
Yes.
They're a chain in London. You've probably had it before, right, Pete? You've had it, right?
Yes, I think I have, yeah. It's one of the many. It's a ramen sort of thing. Is it more ramen-y sort of stuff?
Yeah, like tonkotsu pork broth ramen.
Right.
And they nailed it. They've done it like justice. The guy that owns it, he's from Hakata in Fukuoka originally. And they've done a really good job there. So you get a bowl of ramen there for like £10, like $12, and it is like the real thing. So that's my advice if you're in London. Obviously, if you're in North America, you've got a lot more options because there's a lot more Japanese people there. And I find Asian cuisine, Japanese cuisine in general is way more prevalent in North America and better. The first Japanese food I ever had was in Vancouver, and it was tempura.
Ah.
And that is why I came to Japan. Once I tasted that, I was like,
please.
This is it. This is the future of food. Just batter everything. Batter the vegetables. Batter the chicken. Batter the fish. Job done. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in, guys, to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Next time that we do the podcast, in the next episode, I will be with Pete Donaldson. That's really creepy.
Together at last.
In a room. It's kind of trippy, though. It still doesn't feel like this is a thing that's going to happen, to see you or to be in the UK or to not be here. Like, I've forgotten. Just it's going to be really weird. I hope the UK is as good as I remember. Is it good?
No, it's not. It's terrible. How many years has it been since we've been together doing podcasts together?
20. You were actually the last friend I ever saw who visited Japan. You were here in like February or March 2020 for the Sapporo Snow Festival.
Right, okay.
And then you went, and then Japan shut, and that's what it's been like
since.
So, right. Yeah, it would have been like February 2020.
Yeah.
So,
well,
2 years and sort of 6 months. You're going to notice that I'm a little bit fatter, a little bit rounder.
Me too, mate.
But hopefully the next time you meet me, after this, I'll be thin again. It'll be magic.
Right, okay.
You'll see. But for now, guys, he doesn't sound overly convinced. But for now, guys, have yourself a great week. And, see you next week in the next episode when I'm in the UK, if I get to the UK. Touch wood. Have a good one, guys. Bye for now.
Bye.
In Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.